The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Friday, November 20th. And, it's a Thursday, November 19th when we're recording this, so I can kind of sneak this in. Happy, engagement anniversary to me. You got engaged like, eight years ago. Maybe that sounds right. Happy birthday to my cousin Aaron.
People anniversary that?
Nah, wait, my wife texted me about
it. But if you're going to interrupt the show to wish a happy engagement anniversary, you'd think you would know the year that you're celebrating. It's kind of an empty wish here, Brinson.
Well, no, because we got engaged in November and then married in June. So I don't know. More importantly than that, we have a special guest for tonight's Thursday Night Football recap. The one, the only fellow podcaster, good friend of the show, Brian McFadden at BMAX Sports Talk. What's up, buddy?
What's up, fellas?
How you doing, man?
It's a great day to be alive.
It is a great day to be alive. I like to try to put some motivational slogans around my house. Nobody listens to them, but I try anyway. My favorite one is Jim Harbaugh's, attack each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
How's that working out for him?
It's not working out for me either. I'm like limping out of bed.
It's like we almost put Brinson on the DL. That's why BMAC's here. He almost had to host the show because Brinson's about to go on injured reserve.
Before we dive into this, the Cardinals played on Thursday night.
Yep.
And that means that Patrick Peterson played. Patrick Peterson is not only BMAC's cousin, but also his co-host on All Things Covered, which is, frankly, I don't want to say second best NFL podcast at CBS, like T1. Can we do tie for first?
It can be second. It can be second. It can be third.
I'm just kidding. You guys are crushing it. Every week you guys have, it's like, all right, well, okay. They had Mike Tomlin and like Jamal Adams and DeAndre. I mean, who else? Like every week I'm like, all right, at some point these guests are going to slow down and it gets better every week and they give you guys great stuff. It's inside access from you and Pat P talking to an athlete, and they open up Jamal Adams, who's a great dude and an honest guy. Gave y'all great stuff this week. Give us the rundown on why people need to subscribe to this excellent podcast.
Well, you kind of said it best. You know, just guys, you know, opening up, not necessarily giving you the generic conversational pieces that you see in interviews, post game interviews, and things like that. Just unfiltered. You know, we try to bring the barbershop feel, the living room feel, the basement feel, the front porch feel. When guys are just chopping it up, having fun, like cameras are not really on you, the lights are not on you, and I think that has been something that has been pretty impressive. I think for all of us, because we're kind of new to this stage. Especially Pat, you know, he's used to being the guy that's, you know, receiving the questions and now he's asking the questions. So, he's done a great job in adapting to that atmosphere, but guys are just being relaxed and being cool. And I think that's been the most intriguing thing about the conversational pieces we've been having with some of these outstanding athletes or sports personalities. Guys are just coming on and gals. We have some females also. We had Joy Taylor from, FS1. We had,
Joy Taylor and I used to host Thursday Night Football, the Thursday Night Football show on CBSSports.com.
Yeah, well, yeah, she did say she started off, yeah, you know, with us. Yeah.
There's actually a picture of me in a, is it, who's the girl?
Oh, okay.
at Halloween,
Jamie
Speedo. Eisenberg and Dave Richard made me dress up as Wilma Flintstone. Is Wilma the one in orange?
Yep.
Yeah. I had to wear a dress the entire show. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, like it's, I like to think, BMAC, that, you know, you got some of the front porch feel, the relaxed, unprepared vibe from this podcast, hanging out with us for as long as you did. I do have a question for you though.
What'd you get?
Your producer. Give me a rating on a 1 to 10 scale. What do you think?
Oh, he's awesome. I think he's the best producer in the land.
I agree.
I think he's the best producer. Might be the hardest working producer when it comes to podcasting in the land.
I can't disagree.
Breach. Is there a podcasting producer awards that we can nominate Debo for?
I mean, if not, we should create that, right? Is that possible?
We'll run it. So we can kind of fix it if we run it, you know?
Yeah.
Make sure Debo wins. Debo, we'll get you a trophy made.
I appreciate this, guys.
Maybe B-Mac can donate one of the ones behind him.
Yeah, we get one of these.
I will say, I really appreciate that. I will say, you know, both very talented in their own rights. Very different working experience with BMAC and Princeton.
Well, one of us is a professional athlete who's spent their entire lives preparing arduously for opponents and individual circumstances. And the other, as I said at some point today on one platform or another, sort of drinks some IPAs and floats through life trying to make it work and making sure nothing blows up. Now, you can decide whether that was BMAC or me I'm talking about. I mean, you can assign the various characteristics there.
Here, I have a question for you. And by the way, BMAC's podcast with Pat P, I love. I love
it. It's really, really good.
I love especially because when they talk to my guy Mike Tomlin, that is the only time in the 13 years Mike Tomlin's been at Pittsburgh where he has opened up talk, because he does not like talking to the media. He says the same thing over and over again. You could tell standard, he was genuinely happy to talk to BMAC. And he loosened up, so that was great. But I want to ask you something, BMAC. Is there any sport, even any game, that you think Brinson could beat you at?
Ooh. I got a couple of them. Go ahead.
I probably would say pool.
Ooh.
My pool game is inconsistent. Now, if you catch me on the wrong night, you're going to get lumped up real decent. If you catch me on the wrong night, you can get lumped up real decent. But sometimes I'm inconsistent, and I'm so annoyed with it because I don't like losing to anything. And I feel like pool should be a game after a few games. You should be able, not necessarily master, but pretty good. Hit that consistent stride. So me personally, I might give Brinson pool, but I don't know how good he is when it comes to playing pool either.
Okay. Pool is a good one. I think I can take in pool. I'm a pretty good pool player. My downside is I'm really short, so I can't make the long shots, but I have a good conception of angles and stuff.
I'm great at geometry, so I'm going to smoke.
I'm good at on the fly, like quasi buzz geometry. I think bowling is one. Maybe I could take you out.
I bet back in bowl.
I got a funny story about bowling though. I'm a right-handed guy. You know what I mean? I've always been a righty. So when I broke my arm, I think 2008, and I had to have surgery, that forced me to learn how to bowl with my left hand. So now my spin is not as good as it used to be because I had a heck of a spin with my right hand. So now when I bowl with my left hand, because for some reason, when I hold a bowling ball with my right arm, it's extremely painful. I mean, I could have an 8-pound ball and it's still extremely painful. So now I have to bowl with my left hand and that's no fun. But I'm not coleslaw, meaning I'm bad. I'm not a bad bowler.
And that's
just
the difference between BMAC and Brinson is that if Brinson did that to his hand, he quits the sport and never plays again. BMAC's practicing with his left hand and saying, I got my spin back.
Well, now I'm a little worried. If BMAC's a big spinner guy, I'm sort of more of a technician, hit the corner side of the front pin and try and knock it down and pick up the spares. I was also going to suggest golf. And
yeah, you beat me in golf. I'll give you that, Will. You I'll give you that.
What about ping pong?
Ooh.
No.
I'm pretty good at ping pong. Oh, tennis. No. I'm good at tennis.
No, you're not beating me in tennis.
Well, here's the thing. Even if BMAC has never played tennis in his life, he is.
I agree with this.
He's a professional athlete. I mean, he's
anything when it comes to being mobile, moving around a little bit. I don't care if I never played. I'm not letting you beat me.
BMAC, what about this? How much of a head start does Brinson get on the 40 before you get worried?
That's ridiculous.
No, I said, how much of a head start?
Right now? Yeah, right I've been now. Retired for a long time. So
is he.
BMAC, I don't care if you've been retired for 30 years. Like, we've been around each other.
I mean, it's only 40, so I can't give him 30. I know he can get me if I gave him 30 yards, so I'd probably say 20.
Who wins that breach?
If I got a 20-yard head start on you, there's no way I'm beating you.
Right, there's
you're walking me down at like.
But Ryan said 40, so I can't give you 30 because you only got 10 yards to go. You got a 30-yard head start.
I think 20 is the magic number. That's where you put the bets down, the over under.
I mean, I'm 2 yards long, give or take. I'll just fall forward and I'll get it if you give me 30.
All right.
See, the thing is, Will, if you have a decent start, you can kind of roll and win the race. If your start is like molasses,
yeah,
it might not be good.
Before we get into the actual analysis of the game, I do have one more question that I think. Did we talk about this at the Super Bowl in Miami? Everything after that Super Bowl sort of, I don't know if you know, sort of devolved into nonsense, but were we at the bar after the game in Miami talking about Breach's marathon?
No, that was during the week.
That was during the week.
Dinner.
So you remember
that dinner.
Yeah, it was at dinner.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so BMAC was one of the people who debunked it and said it was ridiculous.
No, BMAC said this is conceivable. I could see he at least admitted it was possible.
I said it was possible. I didn't jump on him. You guys jumped on him. Will, you totally jumped on him.
Yeah, it's insane. He's like, yeah, you know, somebody was like, do you want to run a marathon? I was like, okay, sure. I'll train for 2 weeks. And he went out and ran a marathon in how long, Breach?
Yeah,
I trained for 3 weeks, not two, and 3.5 hours.
Stop it.
And how long was that marathon?
26.2 miles.
It's possible.
No, BMAC.
Yeah, it's possible.
BMAC, look at your elbow and then look at your hand. That's how long Breach's legs are. There's no way he ran that fast.
Yeah, that makes it easier. Your steps are so short, you don't run out of breath. It's like speed walking.
He got those Kyler Murray steps.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a professional podcaster. That's a host who knows how to move the topic onto the relevant frame of information.
That's a nice segue.
About Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray lost on Thursday night, 28-21. The Seahawks win. I think that was an impressive, I don't know if it was a more impressive win by the Seahawks, BMAC, or a less impressive loss by the Cardinals, who I hated what they did down the stretch in the second half. Cliff Kingsbury's challenge was actually a good move because there's a free timeout, a free roll there. But other than that, I don't think that Cliff Kingsbury necessarily makes really smart decisions in the game they're at the 30 thereabouts on, they're down 7. They take a deep shot. And Larry Fitzgerald's a Hall of Famer. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, top 5 wide receiver of all time. But you throw your play call is Larry Fitzgerald up the seam in triple coverage. Then you throw to Andy Isabella at the goal line. And then you take a sack for Kyler Murray. All that was really disappointing given that it's first, like 2nd and 10, just pick up the first downs and get in the end zone, right?
No, listen, it's funny that you mentioned this about Cliff Kingsbury, because I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, he seems to be a player's coach. They respect him, and he does a good job offensively and in totality with the entire team, getting them prepared. But in certain critical moments throughout this season, certain ball games, you really see the lack of experience.
Yep.
You really see some things that we saw surface on the collegiate end when you talk about questionable decisions. Like challenging that fumble. I mean,
I actually disagree with that. And I thought the same thing at first, but he was going to call timeout anyway. So you challenge it. And if there's a 1% chance it's overturned, you're calling timeout anyway, because you're stopping it at like 2:30 on 3rd and long. So it's actually it's a free roll on the challenge. That was actually a smart play. I didn't think so either at the time.
If you look at it that way, then no question, because I thought it was going to probably be a booth challenge regardless.
No, because it was at 2:30, I think. So it was outside the 2-minute warning.
I thought it was going to be a booth challenge regardless.
It was going to be Seattle's ball, or maybe 99%. But throwing the challenge flag actually was the smart play. And the reason why we all thought it was dumb is because we're used to Cliff Kingsbury kicking 24-yard field goals.
Also, he's the guy who iced his own kicker the first time these two teams played.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, keep going.
It's just a lack of experience. But one thing that I'm starting to see surface with this ball club, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, the slow starts. It seems like every week this team has a slow start. And they had another slow start against a playoff caliber team, playoff like atmosphere with a lot on the line. They just get off to a slow start, and then the penalties, self-inflicted wounds. I think they had around 10 penalties for over 100 yards or something like that tonight. You're not going to win ball games against good teams, especially on the road with crazy bad penalties. That has been something that's followed this team throughout the season on both sides of the football. I mean, a penalty in the end zone resulted to points for Seattle. That was pretty much the final say all for them winning that ball game when they got that holding call, in the end zone. That Drake Kirkpatrick penalty. I mean, like that right there is like, yo, that led to points right before halftime. That was fourth down. They were going to punt the football.
10 penalties for 115 yards. He taunted DK Metcalf. Like, maybe don't do that. I don't know.
I mean, like, and the thing I don't understand about that penalty with Drake Kirkpatrick, multiple times they were trying to restrain him away from Metcalf, and he just wanted to look for the beef. He wanted the altercation. And then you 15 yards, that resulted to points. So think about this. Two bad penalties resulted for points for Seattle. And they won this game by 7 points. And Arnette, Kirkpatrick, was it a touchdown or field goal they ended up with that extended that drive, that penalty? Was that a touchdown?
For the Cardinals when DK Metcalf and Kirkpatrick
got in that. I think they scored a touchdown. That was right before halftime.
They did score a touchdown. That was the first drive after halftime.
Wow. That was
the first drive after halftime, and the Seahawks went down and did get a touchdown there.
So two penalties resulted in 9 points. The touchdown – with that penalty you're talking about, Breach, and then the holding call in the end zone, which was a safety.
And the penalty on Pat P, the pass interference.
That was that resulted in a field goal.
Should have resulted in a touchdown, but DK got smacked in the face of the football and dropped
it. Yeah, that was another bad play. So penalties like that, playing against a good team, you can't have those surface. And that has been something that's followed this team throughout the year. And then couldn't even run the football tonight. I mean, with the running game – was non-existent.
So is this a function of the Seattle defense getting better? I mean, we talked about Jamal Adams not doing anything last week when he came back. Or is this a function of Kyler Murray's shoulder not being great and him looking? He missed a lot of passes, a lot of easy passes too. I think no one expected Russ to continue to struggle. I mean, he started off red hot, threw a bunch of interceptions the last few weeks, and then he got back on track, which is what everyone expected. But I still don't know what to make of the Seattle team because the defense, that's what I'm concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see anything, BMAC, that made you feel better about that defense?
Well, they got a guy that can win one-on-one, beat one-on-one blockers in Carlos Dunlap. And he had that game-winning sack against Kyler Murray. So that's a plus. Getting Jamal Adams back in the fold definitely helped this team. So those two pieces, I think, can really bring this team together to be more consistent than what they've been so far this season. But one thing I can say, they can't play any worse totally as a defense. They're dead last in total yards allowed, right? They're 32nd in the National Football League. So they can't get any worse. I think they will improve, especially when this group gets used to playing with each other with all the new pieces and everybody's healthy. But I can't say this. I think we saw positive steps from Seattle's defense. But we saw something in Kyler Murray that I think he was dealing with a serious injury. Not serious, but it was definitely uncomfortable. Because one thing he didn't really do a lot in his ball game, running the football. Like anytime he ran, he was so tentative of getting tackled, he would give himself up. I remember one third down, he ran the read option and he should have handed the ball off to the runner. He kept the football and there was a defender. Instead of him making the defender miss, he just decided to give himself up. So I think that showed it definitely was a problem for him throughout the ball game.
Yeah, that was actually one exact play I was going to bring up, that example, because if Kyler Murray's healthy, he tries to juke that guy and get the first down. You always see him do that. And it looked like he was afraid to take a hit, and that shoulder injury happened in the first quarter. And it looked like he was just playing timidly, whether it was, you know, the Seahawks were getting a lot of pressure, which I don't think he was used to. It was Carlos Dunlap. They've got a couple new guys on the defensive line who come in and just helps right away. And it just looked like he was afraid to take a hit. So you saw him unleashing passes too quickly, and then he was missing guys. I mean, when he missed DeAndre Hopkins wide open, like 5 yards downfield, for it would have been the easiest first down in Arizona Cardinals history. I mean, Brinson, we're talking about your athleticism. You could have made that throw. Wilson could have made that throw.
I was a baseball player as a kid. So I mean,
well, then you definitely could have made that
throw. That was a tough physical throw, but for Kyler, that's a freebie.
You could have
shoveled
it.
That's a routine pass. That's a routine pass for him.
And by the way, on that, the down y'all are talking about, the play before that, which I think was like 2nd and 3, Kyler goes up the middle and slides early. And they rolled him down a yard short, and that's why they had to do the read option out to the left. And he ended up, and then now it's 4th and 3, and they punt because Kingsbury – the weird thing about Kingsbury and Sean McVay, they're young, handsome, offensive guys. They're Pete Carroll, man. They're conservative as hell. Like, they don't want to go for it on 4th down at midfield. They want to punt and kick long field goals.
Yeah, I feel like Kyle Shanahan looks at those guys and goes, those guys don't have the cojones I have.
Maybe.
Well, he's probably. he's not afraid.
Yeah.
I feel like.
The Dunlap thing is interesting. Dunlap is kind of making a difference there.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Breach, did he make a difference the first when he was allowed on the field the first 7 or 8 weeks in Cincinnati?
I mean, he tried to sell his house on Twitter. Does that count as making a difference? He was helping the Cincinnati real estate market.
Is it still up for sale?
That's a good question. I mean, I might look to buy it now if it is. He's got to have a discount. It's been on sale for a month. No,
Breach, how would you handicap this NFC West race?
I would put the Seahawks on top. I think the Seahawks, what we learned is that they're better than the Cardinals. I mean, if you look at the first game, the Cardinals did not lead the Seahawks for a single second in either game. Even that first game, they didn't lead till the clock was at zero on a field goal in overtime. So they are always playing from behind against Seattle. And I think Seattle's just either slightly better coached, but you put it all together, I think they're a slightly better team. I think the Rams are the wild card. I think they're the ones that could maybe win it, but just because the Seahawks schedule so much easier down the stretch, I would put them at the top to win the division.
Well,
I don't know if you guys agree.
Yeah, I mean, that Seahawks schedule is, we said it last week when they played terribly, that Seahawks schedule is so incredibly easy that even the Jets might win a game on that. That's not really true.
And also, too, something we got to factor in, they will get healthy when it comes to running the football. Just having Carlos Hyde was a big plus for them.
Yep.
Finally, Russell Wilson was not the leading rusher for the ball club, something he had to do over the last 2 weeks. So you get Carlos Hyde back. Eventually, you get Chris Carson back. That provides more balance for Russell Wilson. And I don't expect to see the turnovers that we've seen from Russell Wilson over the last few weeks continue to follow him. If he plays like he played in the beginning of the season, or not even that good. He doesn't have to put up these crazy MVP numbers, but play sound football like he did tonight with a reliable running game to rely on. And that defense gets better. Yeah, Breach, I'm right there with you. I think Seattle is the best team in this division based on some of the things we hit on, along with health. If they get healthy, those running backs get back into the fold, that offense is going to be extremely tough.
I've got a quasi hot take on this that I think the Rams are actually going to win the division because.
Wow. What?
Well, but so now I am curious what you think about this, BMAC, because so the key point for both Seattle and Arizona is that they have this alpha receiver in DK Metcalf and DeAndre Hopkins.
Yep.
I think right now Jalen Ramsey is the best corner in football and he can lock one of those guys down. You're forced to turn to your secondary options. And while you're turning to your secondary options, Aaron Donald is breathing down your neck, which is pretty effing terrifying. So I don't trust Jared Goff, but I trust Sean McVay and I trust the weapons they have. So, and that defense is kind of cooking right now. So I think the Seahawks schedule will give them the benefit down the stretch, but I kind of like the Rams. Now,
well, that's going to blow up this Sunday if they get smoked by the Buccaneers.
No question.
But that's on Monday,
Will, you said you don't trust Jared Goff, but you trust McVay. That's like saying you trust the car, but you don't trust the driver.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a self-driving car I'm looking for here.
I don't know how far you're going to go if you don't trust the driver.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I need a self-steering car. I need an extra 10 seconds on that, that helmet-to-helmet communication. BMAC, I do have a question for you about receivers before we get to the break.
Yep.
You are a former professional cornerback. Who would you rather face, DeAndre Hopkins or DK Metcalf?
Hopkins.
You'd rather face Hopkins.
Yep.
You didn't even hesitate.
Yeah. The reason why is because D Hop is fast, but he's not as fast as Metcalf. I mean, speed kills. Yeah. People are afraid of speed. And you guys watch football all the time. When you see a defender playing against a guy that has wheels, you can tell he's afraid and he's respecting that speed, right? And I think when you're playing against a guy that's as big as DK, strong as DK, can run routes like he can, and he can run by you at any given time, you have to respect that. And that's too much to worry about. For D-Hop is a fast guy, but you don't really – consider him to be a burner. The thing about D-Hop, which makes him so unique and so good, he's the best 50-50 ball catcher in his era, in my opinion. I think the second best 50-50 ball catcher is the guy he plays with in Larry Fitzgerald when he was in his prime. But D-Hop is like that plus more. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay in going against a guy that can battle me in the 50-50 drills and he might win more than lose. I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with playing against a guy, if I blink the wrong way, he's behind me and now I'm chasing. I don't want that.
DeAndre Hopkins rate of 4.57, 40 at the combine. DK 4.33. Of course, information provided by the best producer, podcast producer.
Debo.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll dive a little bit deeper into that NFC West race.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, so we mentioned a little debate about the Seahawks, Cardinals, and Rams.
Hey, Brinson, before you get going, let me ask a follow-up question that you just asked BMAC before the break. Going back to the BMAC era. So, BMAC, let me list these guys for you, and you tell me where they rank in terms of coverability, because I think you faced them all. So, Megatron, Andre Johnson, Randy Moss, T.O.
Chad Johnson.
Sheesh.
So.
You don't want to face any of them.
Where do these four Hall of Famers rank in terms of cover?
Wow. I mean, Ryan, you didn't spare me at all on that one.
And Sean Morey.
And Jerry Rice.
Ryan's trying to go Sean viral Morey. By getting BMAC to insult one of these guys.
One of the best special teams play I've ever played with him and Chidi Bang. Chidi Awoma.
Chidi is my favorite player ever.
Yeah, Chidi. I think the most difficult guy to cover would be Moss.
Okay, more so than Megatron.
Speed kills. You heard him.
Yes. We just talked about. I just talked about speed, right?
Megatron ran a 4.
Moss is like throwing his arm up as you're like in a backpedal, and you're like, why is he throwing his arm up? Oh, that's why. He's
Moss is like a creative player. You might just see him every 40 years. Yeah. One of a guy like Randy Moss might come surface. So I would say Moss would be the guy, the most difficult one, followed by. Who else was in that list? You said
Megatron, Andre Johnson, and T.O.
you cover T.O.?
Yeah. And see, the thing about T.O. is I don't know exactly what his 40 time was on paper, but T.O. was super fast. T.O. was a strong runner.
I feel like Metcalf is the modern day T.O.
Yeah. Metcalf is a mix. He is, and it's kind of hard to say this, but he's a more muscle bound Terrell Owens.
Wow.
And I think he runs better routes than T.O. I think he has a little more bend than T.O. And I like his lateral movement also. You know what I mean? When it comes to, you know, outside routes. And so I would say, yeah, Metcalf might be a more muscle bound T.O.
But he's also number terrifying two. In the open field.
Yeah. And another thing that Metcalf.
Like, oh God.
And another thing that Metcalf does well, I know we're kind of getting off topic right quick, but his blocking, he really attacks blocking like running routes. You don't see a lot of receivers, big receivers, you just don't do that. Metcalf is trying to play bully ball on running plays, so he's trying to block you. I think number two would probably be Calvin, followed by, man, you talking about Andre Johnson was a grown man. See, I played against Dre at Miami
when I was
at Florida State. So,
that's right.
That Miami team was
loaded. That Miami team, yes.
Is that the 0-1 Miami team with like McGahee?
Yeah, my sophomore year. Yeah, that 0-1 Miami team was
y'all were stacked.
We were stacked too. When we played them, I think we had a total of 30-something pros on that team between both teams combined, like 30-something pros.
I'm sorry. Is this an early 2000s ACC podcast? Maybe it is.
Yeah, yeah. I would put Calvin – to Dre, I'll say T.O. and then Dre, and then who was the final one?
That was it.
I think that's the correct ranking as a non-professional cornerback.
That's amazing. It was tough for you, though. Let me ask you one more thing. I know we're off topic, but I'm curious now. What would Dick LeBeau say about stopping, like Megatron, for example? What's the conversation that week?
Well, the thing, when you're playing against an exceptional, gifted player, athletically, they're probably the best on the field at any given time. So if you don't have that rare defender that can match up with them athletically, just from God-given skills, then you have to really prep and study them. And so what we used to do, and the thing I love about being in Pittsburgh, the unique thing that we had in Pittsburgh, guys, was the majority of our defensive coaches played the game, right? So Ray Orton, Dan Perry, early in my career, who was a command of the secondary, they both played in the league. We know Dick LeBeau played for the Lions. Keith Butler played for Seattle. Coach Mitch played for Alabama, All-American at Alabama, first African-American All-American at Alabama, if not mistaken. But they all had ties to the actual game. So the way they coached us was not as a coach standing on the sideline. They coached us as a player, being able to improvise on the fly and make adjustments when we weren't prepared to make adjustments. So one thing they would do, if we're playing against a unicorn of a player, like a DK Metcalf, and we might not have a physical specimen that can go toe-to-toe with DK, that's where the game plan comes into place. And what we would do is study everything that they did, not just with the wide receivers, but the quarterback, because the quarterback is basically the remote control to the remote control car. That car doesn't do too much without that remote control. So if we can find a way to understand what that remote control, which is the quarterback, loves to do with certain plays when he's targeting that man, now we will all be dialed in. So that was something that Dick LeBeau always emphasized. And if we had a crazy matchup, could be against a running back or tight end, anytime we played against Tony Gonzalez or Antonio Gates, you know, it would be a group effort. So just because a wide receiver is out there, we know we have to respect him. The defensive linemen had something they need to do as well for all of us to be successful. So it was by game plan. It was by prepping. It would be something as easy as this, right? When we used to watch tape together, we used to always try to figure out something about that wide receiver. It could be something as simple as this. We playing against DK Metcalf. Anytime it's on the passing play, let's see what foot he puts up, right? And if it's a passing play, look and see what he does with his right foot. A lot of times when you guys watch games now, peep this out. On most passing plays, a wide receiver, if they know exactly this is a play they might be getting the football, when they come to the line of scrimmage, they usually grab their gloves and they grab it by the wrist area. What they're doing is they're tightening up the glove because they want to make sure that glove is in place for when they catch the football, especially if it's a fast spiral. So a lot of receivers, when they know it's a passing play, they get down and they grab the wrist of the glove. And usually they do it and don't even realize they're doing it. So it could be little habits like that. When we see that, and now I see him tightening that hand, I might give a signal to my safety. Yo, Troy, in the air, air, air. That means they're throwing the football. Or if I say, yo, Troy, yo, Ryan, yo, Ike, I point in the air, they're throwing the football. Now we're going to echo that throughout the defense. Yo, it's a passing play. It's a passing play. It could be the same thing for certain slot wide receivers, offensive linemen. Tendencies are something that we all have, right? When you wake up in the morning, you got a tendency to go get coffee. You don't realize you do the same routine every day, but it happens in your life. It's the same thing with football players. We all have tendencies.
It's like a poker tell.
Find a way.
Yeah,
say it again.
Tell.
It's like a poker tell. Like you're telling what you're going to do by virtue of your actions physically.
And you don't realize you're telling it.
Yeah.
Yeah, things like that will put us in positions to be successful.
Podcast. Imagine not subscribing to All Things Covered. No, I mean, like, that's now I'm like picturing Tyler Lockett like pulling his gloves tight, and you realize you're like, all right, they're not running it here. Yeah. And like, he's not pulling those things tight if he's blocking. You don't care if you're blocking.
And Antonio Brown used to do it a lot because I used to practice against him, so we kind of pick up each other's tendencies with all the wide receivers. Anytime I knew it was a pass play, if he dig that first foot, his plant leg in the ground, he's trying to get a grip. Oh, he's coming off. And he's coming off powerful. He's trying to go. So now I'm just going to try to beat him to the spot. So those are things that our coaches used to do for us. Every major player that we were playing against offensively, we try to pick up tendencies and try to pick it up that it can put us in position. It's like a cheat code. It's like a cheat code without cheating. You're doing what you're supposed to do, but a lot of people don't realize they have tendencies. And the same could be for us when we're getting watched on tape also. Don't try to do the same thing with certain plays because offensive guys and their coaches get paid too, and they might pick up the same tendencies you're looking for.
Well, and like just to add on to that, there, I would assume too, you know, as a defensive back, you would watch the film and you would see certain things that a guy would do if he's running a slant, right? Like he might put his left foot a little bit outside trying to get leverage to cut inside, and then you know you can jump a route, et cetera. Is that right?
No question. It's about leverage too. One thing that I know that is different in college football compared to NFL football is splits. alignment. Usually when you get a wide split in college football, they're only going one place. That's in. They're running the in route. But quarterbacks are so good, you can get a wide split and they still run a comeback or an out cutting route because the quarterbacks have a stronger arm and they're more accurate. So when it comes to splits, the best way to help you be in positions to understand what wide receivers are going to do with their split, look at the entire formation, because formation dictates what the wide receivers will do as well. So what you do is you look at the formation and whatever your game prep told you to do, be prepared to jump that. Don't necessarily do it before it happens, but just be aware of potentially what you could get. So this is for a prime example. Let's say I get a wide split, right? The width of the wide receiver is pretty wide. Now I go back and dissect everything that I looked at when he has this certain split. I might get four routes, right? Four routes based on the formation and based on the splits. Now, his first three steps, that would eliminate one route. If he's coming at me straight forward, that might eliminate that stem cutting dig. Now I got to understand I might get a straight go ball. I might get a comeback or I might get an out cutting route. After the 15th step, it's hard to really count 15 steps, but you got to understand where you are on the football field. Now you know if he hasn't break yet, he's running the go ball. Now you can get go
nine,
ball.
At that point at 15, you run. You know he's running the nine route. And
yeah, he's probably running a nine route. Now yeah. The thing about the nine route is they can improvise and make that turn that into a back shoulder fade, which is something I hate. Those are the most difficult passes to defend, the back shoulder fade. But it's all about where you are positioned because a quarterback usually throws the back shoulder fade based on the defender.
So you're running basically like three different computer programs in your brain at different numbers of steps.
No
like
question.
When you see him come off the line, you're like, all right, it's one of these two things. And then at like five steps, you're like, all right, it's like, is he going to curl? Is he going to cut in? And then at 15 steps, you're like, all right, it's either a deep end or he's going nine.
Yeah. You got to really process it.
That's
quick.
A lot of really now, the thing is, path.
All of that goes out of the window if I'm playing bump and run, right? Cause you don't really have time to really think like that because you're in a combative position. But when you're playing off technique, you're playing with free eyes. So therefore you can get a three-step read from the quarterback. I don't know if you guys know what a three-step read is, but that is where I read the quarterback's first three steps. On his third step, if his shoulders are turning, now I'm going to get a short route. I'm going to get a hitch. I'm going to get a quick slant. I'm going to get a quick out from the wide receiver. But usually too, this is something that I learned from Asante Samuel watching him. He would watch the quarterback pass the three-step read. He would keep his eyes on the quarterback going to the fourth or fifth step because even on the fourth or fifth step, if they're turning their shoulders, now you're going to get an intermediate route, a 12 to 15 yard curl, a 12 to 15 yard dig, 12 to 15 yard comeback or
that's how he ended up with so many pick sixes too because he's jumping those intermediate routes. He's taking to the house.
Listen, Asante Samuels probably was the best quarterback watcher I've ever seen play the game, playing off technique. Because one thing about him, you think about him, right? Asante was never the most gifted cornerback on the field, never was considered the fastest, quickest, whatever. But he was so precise in his ability to think and dissect routes based on him watching the quarterback. That's all he did. He watched the quarterback, and he was so good in understanding when their shoulders are turning, ball is coming. And he was more right than wrong, and he didn't care about gambling, and he would go at it. So those are attributes that a lot of corners don't really pay attention to because we're taught only to watch three steps. The first three steps, get your eyes on the wide receiver. But it's okay because you have peripheral, be able to still look at the quarterback, but see that wide receiver in your peripheral as well to be able to be in positions after that fourth step from the quarterback or fifth step from the quarterback to be on top of the receiver, wherever or direction he's going.
So, Brinson, let me follow up with to circle back to where we started this conversation.
I'm fried.
What is your best route against BMAC? What route are you winning against BMAC? And you can have Russell Wilson throwing you the ball. You can have a legit quarterback. Like, what is your go-to route when you have to complete a pass against BMAC?
Oh, well, I'm going the full Joe Flacco here. I'm going to do a stop and go route, and then on the go, I'm going to flail up. Like I've been absolutely manhandled by BMAC at press conference.
Oh, okay.
And I'm gonna act like I'd be like, oh, man, come on, BMAC, come on, that wasn't necessary. You know, like you're scared I'm gonna torture you, and you're like, it's DPI. Like, all right, let's run it again, and then I'm gonna run a really quick in cutting breaker. Just like it's not even like a mesh route. It's just just, I'm going to run horizontal to the line of scrimmage and catch like a jet sweep.
Style. I was going
to
say, your best shot at a catch on BMAC is a wide receiver screen.
But or then you get jet sweep.
But then you get tackled 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, so it doesn't even matter that you caught it.
Brinson, are you a grunter when you run? It looks like you grunt when you run. Is that true?
No, I'm actually a better runter than people give me credit for. I'm a pretty fast runner. I have a
Sean outran you.
No, what, dude, close. Whatever. You can, now, BMAC, you can ask Joy Taylor this. You can ask Jamie Eisenberg this. And Dave Richard or Matt Brodsky. All were there. It's on videotape. I have a sub 540 at it, like in the last like five or
that's
six
pretty years, good.
Down in Fort. Yeah, hell yeah, it's good. 49640 down in Fort Lauderdale at one of those like
is there any you say they have
it
video?
Was on a broken hand and I'm claiming a 3.5 hour marathon. This guy's claiming a sub 540. Get out of here.
No, dude, I'm telling you, it's on video.
You couldn't drive a car sub 540. You didn't want to sub
540. Joy Taylor and Jamie ran the 40 as like a thing that we talked about on the set of the show. I ran a 4.96. It's hand time. Now I give you that, but it's hand time. It was official on a high school track, 4.96. Uh-huh. I would probably run like a 5.34 right now.
I gotta find this video because I'm pretty sure they clipped it and saved it, right?
You would think so. Maybe they were scared. Maybe it's such a deep state conspiracy that Brinson is fast and they just torched him. It's like
Brinson, I would be shocked if you could get, I would say 5.7 is your over under. If
wow.
you think you can run a 5.34.
No, I probably can right now. No, 5.34 is off the table. I am out of shape.
Well, can you at least run a 5.6?
I don't know. 5.6. What does Eisen run in that
over
suit?
Six and change.
You know, he breaks six.
Brinson, you're not running a six, Brinson. No, you can't be running a six.
If you put me out there today, tomorrow.
Eisen runs a six in a suit.
I'm just telling you where I'm at in my life right now, BMAC. You toss me out there tomorrow, I'm struggling to break a six. If you give me a couple of weeks to prep and do some, like, you know, do some non-quarantine 6-year-old child that I'm homeschooling while trying to work a full-time job and deal with my wife in the middle of a football season, I could probably get down to like a 5.3.
Brinson, we started this podcast by talking about how it was the 8-year anniversary of maybe your engagement. It is the 6-year anniversary
of
your 40-yard race.
We were in khakis against
Jamie Eisenberg.
Of the alleged 40-yard race.
That took place on November 20th, 2014, based on this tweet you sent out.
Be back. Does a 40-yard dash count if you're drunk?
Yes.
Busted.
So now, if we're looking at the NFC West and where things stand as it relates to this, I don't know where I'm going with this. Debo, do we need to get out of here? Debo's dropping video chats. Get out of here, Debo. What are you doing? You're the worst producer on the planet.
Oh, wait a minute. I just got a text, and I just see this is the race.
Look at this. He got beat.
A mistake.
So he got beat by our former employee Sean Wagner McGuff. Sean smoked him.
I'm looking at the video, guys. Is this wheel in the middle?
I got to be honest. My biggest regret after that was not that I lost or
and
that I
lost,
got smoked.
You lost.
No, my biggest regret was that I ran barefoot in the streets in like a backward street of Fort Lauderdale. Like I'm lucky. My feet are septic.
Oh, this is when you lost to
Sean.
Backward
street, Brinson. You didn't have to say backward street. This is Fort Lauderdale.
He lost to Sean, but also those two other folks that no one, those guys just walked up after smoking cigarettes. We didn't even know them. And they're like,
they just jumped in the race also.
They jumped in the race and they came in second and third.
that sounds like a night I had in Tallahassee.
I bet you didn't come in last.
No. I wasn't even racing. I was just watching some of my teammates race dead drunk down a hill.
Oh
wow.
Yeah, so imagine how that, and it was a slope in the road that just kind of came out of nowhere. So if you wasn't familiar with the road, that hill was going to surprise you.
By the way, while BMAC was dropping, I'm sure that we've talked about this before, but I was I ended up in a deep dive on like college on Sports Reference in that in y'all's 2003 season, late in the year, November 15th. I was actually so my mom's whole family lives in Florida. A bunch live in Jacksonville and Gainesville area. And then there's a couple that live in the Tallahassee area. My aunt and uncle are huge Florida State fans. I'd never been to Seminole Stadium. 2003, we're down there around Thanksgiving. They're like, we got tickets. You, Rick, your dad are going to Tallahassee to see the NC State Florida State game.
I remember that game.
The overtime game.
Yep.
50 to 44.
Philip Rivers is on fire that day.
Rivers is on fire. I was like trash talking these fans at the Seminole Stadium. All of a sudden, it's in overtime. I'm like, oh no. And just getting like that place is unreal, man.
Yeah.
Like when that place is going full Seminole chant, it is absolutely petrifying.
No question. T.J. McClendon was the running back.
Yeah. T.A. McClendon. Yeah.
T.A. McClendon. I remember that.
Yeah. He's a monster. Jericho Cotri.
Oh, yeah.
Greg Golden.
Y'all had Greg Jones at running back? Was it Ricks or was it?
It was Ricks. Ricks
as the quarterback?
Yeah. Yeah, that man, Phillip Rivers tore us up.
Crow on the team then.
Cole Thorpe.
No, Antonio Cromartie.
Yeah, I think he was a freshman.
Yeah. I was scrolling through this box score. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Y'all's defense was absurd. Anyway, Rivers was hot that weekend.
B-Mac, I know you've asked this before, but how aggravating it is to play against someone like Phillip Rivers who says dadgummit and still talks smack?
He talks a lot of trash. You know one thing? And NC State, he didn't really talk that much trash, or if he did, we didn't really see it or pay attention. But when he got drafted to Chargers, oh, my goodness. And guys, you see he's still talking a whole lot of trash now. But his trash talking is almost like it feels fake because he doesn't curse.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah, like it's fake. It doesn't seem real.
And God, it's like being trash talked by an 8-year-old. Like, you don't even know how to react. You're just like, what? Yeah,
you don't really take it.
You're like, what?
Serious.
Why are you saying that government, man? That's weird. Debo, I don't know. You're in charge of it. But do we need to cover the NFC West anymore? Are we good?
No, just you told us who's winning the division.
I think the Rams.
Rams, yeah, mark that down, Debo.
What are the Seahawks finishing?
Hot take.
Best case, worst case for the Seahawks and Cardinals record wise. I mean, Cardinals definitely getting into the playoffs. You don't have any questions about them reaching the postseason.
Let's see. The Cardinals have, what do they got? They got the Patriots. They're playing at New England next.
Yep.
I don't think that's a lock.
It's not a layup.
Rams after that at the Giants. Eagles at home, 49ers at home, at Rams. They haven't played the Rams once.
So I would say worst case for the Cardinals is 8-8 now the playoffs.
No, wow. I think worst case is 9. I think they get 9 wins.
If that happens, guys, how big a disappointment is that? To be at 1.6-3 and you finish 8-8 or 9-7?
Huge disappointment.
It's not a disappointment if you said at the beginning of the season, hey, this team's going to win 9 games because they won 5 games last year. Like, oh, okay, progress. But now, to your point, at 6-3 with a lot of expectations and having beat Seattle before tonight, you're like, okay, what happened?
Yeah, and also, too, look at it like this. Before losing to Seattle tonight, look at some of the losses. They lost to the Lions. Mm-hmm. They lost to the Panthers without Christian McCaffrey. They should have beat the Dolphins. Those are all winnable ball games. And now you got the Patriots who's kind of, you know, getting things together with the Rams. I don't know. I think if they miss the playoffs being at 6-3 at one point in time with an MVP caliber quarterback, I think it is a disappointment.
Well, let me ask you this.
If they miss the playoffs, if it's 6-3 and Kyler Murray's top 5 MVP, that's a problem.
But one thing is if Kyler Murray's injury it stays with him, that shoulder is bad and all of a sudden he's not running the ball. Because look, just looking at this right now, when Kyler Murray rushes for 20 or fewer yards, the Cardinals are 0-5-1. I know we talk about that with running backs. Who cares if they hit 100 yards? But with him, it's different because he's such a dynamic part of the offense. And when he's not running the ball, the defense, you know, doesn't have to worry about it, especially if he's playing injured. So I do think if you take that element out of their game because he's battling the shoulder injury for the next 2 or 3 weeks, that could change things. And all of a sudden, maybe they aren't such a lock for the playoffs.
I agree with that stat because going into tonight's ball game, they were the number one rushing offense in National Football League. And it didn't really feel like it because they don't have a featured guy. But a lot of that has to do with Kyler Murray running the football that has added to their stats on the ground. But that's when, as a coach, you have to make adjustments because I don't care who you are as a quarterback, how athletic you are. If you're always running the football, there's a good chance you will be put in harm's way and you might not be able to withstand those hits all the time. So now you got to improvise and try to find ways to get things going without him always running the football.
So Brinson and Breach, I'll put this to you because you guys are talking nonsense must have been Sunday night. Better chance of making the playoffs. Or who would you like to back at this point? the Cardinals or the Vikings?
Wow.
Well, I'm going to take the 6-4 team over the.
Well, you were talking them up, though, the Vikings the other day.
So the Vikings are the Vikings 4-5?
They're 4-5.
They got Dallas this week.
And then Jacksonville, and then Carolina, or then Carolina, then Jacksonville.
Okay, so, I mean, you should feel pretty good about that. You just said they're going to win 5 in a row, I think is what you said, isn't it?
I think that they will get to 7-5. I think Dalvin's going bananas the next couple of weeks.
I need to have him on my fantasy team. I need him.
So the Cardinals are 6-4, and the Vikings are 4-5. And the Vikings have the Cowboys, Jaguars, and Panthers, and the Cardinals have the Patriots, Rams, and Giants?
I'll take the Vikings.
My base is that if they could lose the Patriots and Rams, that's not crazy. All of a sudden they're 6-6, and then the Vikings win their next two. All of a sudden, the Vikings could have a better record than the Cardinals in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Okay. Let me ask you guys this question: Do you believe you can get into the playoffs with that extra spot? Can you get into the playoffs 9-7? Legit?
I don't think so. I think it's going to take 10 wins
in the NFC.
I think so.
Now, there's also a chance that, I mean, they approved the 8-team playoff, so.
Yeah, just against on 7 teams now, but yeah, 8 obviously makes things a little easier.
I think the Cardinals, of their 6 games left, will probably go 3-3.
I think that might not be good enough.
Right. It might not be.
Because there's 6 games. You got New England, the Rams twice, Giants, Eagles, Niners.
They gave the Niners troubles last year when they were good. I think they'll get the Eagles.
I think the Rams could sweep them. I mean, you were talking about Aaron Donald, and the Rams have done such a good job of shutting down the mobile quarterback because they have to deal with Russell Wilson all the time. And I think that's what it comes down to.
Can you split with the Rams to get to 9-7 and sneak in the playoffs?
Jared Goff is not very good. I don't know why you guys are.
The Cardinals defense ain't that great. I mean, like, they're not getting after anybody. Russell Wilson was pretty.
Chandler Jones.
They had a backup center there.
Yeah, but Ryan, Jared Goff is not very good team. Just beat the Seahawks.
Okay, so the Seahawks are now 7-3. Mm-hmm. They are at the Eagles next week.
They're going to 11 wins.
That should be a win against Philly.
Followed by Giants and Jets at home. Then at Washington.
They're rolling.
Rams at home at 49ers. What is the best case, worst case for the Seahawks?
They lose, what, 2 more games is worst case?
Yeah, that's worst case.
3 is worst case, I guess.
I'm at the point now, if this defense can get better, and we don't really know tonight because Kyler was hurt, but assuming they can get better with Jamal and with Carlos, and LJ Collier made a play, he was the pass rusher when they got the safety there. I like this team better than the Packers.
I do too. I do too.
Will triple that.
Especially you get Chris Carson back healthy. Yeah.
I agree. Carson's a big part of that offense. I don't think.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Look, what's going to happen after they play the sorry ass Eagles? They're really sorry. I'm only doing this for Debo effect.
I know.
The Giants and the Jets and then Washington. In 4 weeks, the Seahawks defense is like statistically going to be top
half. The best defense in the NFL.
Like they're going to skyrocket because they're playing terrible teams. Russ is going to cook. Debo, you're on this, what are the MVP odds if they are available?
They are actually not updated, unfortunately, right now. I was trying to look. Kyler Murray entered tonight at +650. Russell Wilson was about +250, but trailing Patrick Mahomes, who's now the leader.
So I think, what do we think Russ is tomorrow morning when people wake up on Friday morning?
What is it, Debo? I'm sorry.
It was around +250 entering the game. 200? Does that sound right? Improve a little bit?
Yeah,
I think that's a smash. Eagles, Giants, Jets, Washington, Rams, 49ers.
Yeah, but I mean, he hit that dry spell, and it was starting to look like, okay, he can't do everything, and then he played well tonight.
Well, would you rather
the Chiefs could go 14-2, and Patrick Mahomes throws 40 touchdown passes and 2 interceptions?
Yeah, that's true. And don't forget about Big Ben.
If it's close, Russ will beat Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-mm.
No, he will because of the
– He's got one interception. He throws 40 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. There's no way Russ is winning it.
No, people will give it to Russ. It's not a computer vote.
I think this is Pat Mahomes' award to lose.
And no one's even talking about him. He's playing so good. That's how good he's playing. No one's even talking about him.
Would you rather bet the Seahawks at +125 to win the division or Russ at +2-1 to win the MVP?
Seahawks. I'm not
the Seahawks are plus 125, right? I feel like that. If you can get plus money on the Seahawks right now with that remaining schedule, that's insane.
Devo pointing out there's a mirror image between Carson Wentz and Russell Wilson, so that's something to keep in mind.
What on earth are you doing, Devo?
It must be a funhouse mirror. I'm not sure how this works.
What is this? What, did Fox put this up on the screen?
Stats don't lie. Stats don't lie.
Devo made that. It's a deep fake. He made it look like Fox made it, and he's going to share it all over. It's going to go viral.
What is this?
Russell Wilson and Carson Wentz are the same quarterback.
A graphic of Carson Wentz and Russell Wilson the last 4 weeks.
When Russ was struggling.
This is some NFC propaganda. What is this nonsense?
I think it's a joke.
Stats right. don't lie.
We have officially, and I'm perfectly fine with eclipsing whatever number Devo and EK gave us for our recap podcast, because BMAC's on here breaking down the mental math of what you do on a route while you're backpedaling to see what a wide receiver's doing. All I can do is like picture me trying to think something and then tripping over my feet and falling backwards four times as the wide receiver is like, what is this guy doing? And runs over and catches it. Subscribe to All Things Covered. You have BMAC, a two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback, talking with his boy, Patrick Peterson, and also a current NFL cornerback and a stud in the league, breaking it down with great guest. BMAC, thank you for joining us. This has been the best recap show of, right, Breach? Wilson? Easily? Best recap?
Oh, easily.
Well, you guys should invite me more.
You're always welcome here. You know that.
We have the same producer, BMAC. Yeah.
Sometimes our producer drops the ball. Doesn't invite the good guests. I don't even think
Devo sleeps. Is that?
Do I don't think he does either. I don't think he does either.
He's sleeping right now. That's the irony.
I mean, I don't know, BMAC. I know we're nearing 1 a.m. right now. I don't know if you have these late nights in you for these recaps. These guys get quite out of hand on Sunday nights. You don't want to know what hour.
The uncut.
Yeah.
Pick six uncut is what it should be called.
BMAC, if you took our outtakes post show, it's not even getting fired. It's just like, all right, is there a rocket to the moon that we can
take? Let me tell you, I knew you guys were definitely some for real professionals because I remember it was, I think it was a few weeks ago and Ryan was up in Connecticut and clearly he had to go over, it was like a long Sunday night game. And I remember he jumped off of HQ.
To
go do a whole show with you guys, entire show. I'm like, yo, these guys are for real professionals. I knew Ryan had to have been dog tired.
Oh, every Sunday night, I have to go upstairs and do that little podcast room.
In the little room, right?
Yeah. And I get home, I get back to the hotel.
He eats like tapioca, and he's like, let's go.
Tapioca, yeah. I get back to the hotel at 2:30, usually, if we're lucky. Devo has this on a schedule, which is great, because it keeps me.
There is honestly nothing worse than a Sunday night game going to overtime. You're just like bludgeoning your head on the desk. Like, please, no. God.
It was
like
that
the Seahawks Cardinals game that was like finished 6-6 in overtime. Like, please, why are we doing this? This is hell on earth. All right. For Breach, Wilson, and BMAC, again, subscribe to All Things Covered.
Appreciate it. Thoughts.
See you soon.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.